Interview with Dr. George Booker.
Okay, I think they seem to be operating.
All right, can you just tell me a little bit about your background in the Saturn program to begin with, how you came into it, and just briefly some of your personal experiences in the Saturn program, and then we can get into Project Highwater a little bit more.
All right, fine. Okay. I came to Huntsville in 1956 at the time when the Army Ballistic Missile Agency was first being formed. And I became associated with Dr. Stuhlinger in 1956 and have remained with him during that time. So essentially I've been with the Space Sciences Laboratory since it consisted of six men in its formation until the time that Dr. Stuhlinger and I left.
This was during the ABMA days?
Yes, yeah. Right. The Space Sciences Laboratory during the ABMA days from 1956 through 1960 was known as the Research Projects Office. And then the Research Projects Laboratory, and eventually it became known as the Space Sciences Laboratory. So the originally the purpose of the space or the Research Projects Office was to try to build up a research program within the Army Ballistic Missile Agency and to keep abreast of what was going on in the field of science outside of the Army Ballistic Missile Agency, and also to interface with the scientific community outside. Essentially, those same objectives were carried over into the Marshall Space Flight Center when the portion of ABMA that was headed by Dr. von Braun became part, or essentially became the core the Marshall Space Flight Center.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fine.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, the Research Projects Office in the ABMA days essentially had to find its own fields of activity, and those were scientific fields of research that were not already covered by other laboratories in ABMA.
This was research that would relate directly to the development of missiles.
In a sense, but during the ABMA days, there was one big difference between the operations of that agency and of the Marshall Space Flight Center. In ABMA days, we had on Redstone Arsenal, essentially a complete launch vehicle and payload development agency. In other words, not only did the Army have the capability of developing a launch vehicle such as the Redstone, but it also had the capability of developing right here the payloads such as Explorer 1. Mm-hmm. Now, so in ABMA, the Space Sciences Laboratory was involved with payload development and the scientific objectives of payloads, in addition to scientific research that supported the development of launch vehicles. Now the situation changed rather dramatically in 1960, because when we became part of NASA, the Marshall role then dealt only with the development of launch vehicles, and the development of payloads was the responsibility of another center, or let's say more than one other center, but at least not the Marshall Space Flight Center. So we went from a situation in ABMA where we were working on both the launch vehicle and the payload to a situation in Marshall when we were concerned only with the launch vehicle.
that make you feel kind of sad that you weren't doing payload business anymore?
Well, it certainly did, because there was a great thrill and pride and satisfaction in working on the early payloads, such as Explorer 1. Mm-hmm. We might also say that a number of people who were heavily involved in the development of the hardware for payloads became disenchanted with the future role of Marshall and left Marshall Space Flight Center, and some of them formed Spacecraft Incorporated here in Huntsville. So our payload developers from the ABMA days are residing at Spacecraft Incorporated right now. Some of them, I should say, not all of them. But anyway, when we so during the ABMA days, these 4 years that I mentioned from 1956 to 1960, the Research Projects Office was involved with quite a few different kinds of activities. Some of them were some of them had to deal with the effect of meteorite impacts upon a launch vehicle or a spacecraft in orbit. In other words, meteorite physics, so to speak. This eventually led to Project Pegasus, which was a meteorite measuring satellite. Some of the other activities dealt with plasma physics and radiation effects in space. Now, this was a direct carryover from our involvement with Van Allen in the development of Explorer 1, which first detected the Van Allen radiation belts. Now, in the Research Projects Office and Research Projects Laboratory in ABMA, we did evaluate much of the raw data from Explorer 1 and Explorer 4, both of which measured the radiation belts. In addition, we were involved with re-entry physics, in other words, the phenomenon of a ballistic body re-entering the atmosphere. One of the projects resulting from that interest in re-entry physics was Project High Water. Now, Project High Water was formulated with the intent that the empty upper stages of the Saturn launch vehicle could be used to carry any kind of a mass to simulate the mass of a full empty stage. During the early launches of the Saturn launch vehicle, where only the first stage was active, it was necessary to put on dummy upper stages, if you want to call them dummy yes. stages, and also to load them with something which would give the appropriate mass. At one time they were loaded with sand, which caused criticism.
Why did it cause so much criticism?
Well, there was some there were comments, there was some criticism, I believe, in Congress and in the newspapers, that we were flying tons of sand and it was a waste of taxpayers' money. So then it was recognized that to partially overcome this criticism, and indeed to do something useful, it would be possible to load the upper stages with water, and then at the apex of its trajectory, or at the highest altitude, to detonate explosive charges which would essentially fracture the upper stages and cause an instantaneous release of the water, which was carried in the upper stage. Then measurements were made to determine the speed of dissociation of the water, in other words, how fast it evaporated or dissociated, and also to try to determine and to measure some of the byproducts of dissociation. So there was a fairly complex set of measurements from the ground looking at the water cloud resulting from Project High Water. Now, Project High Water was a fairly inexpensive project as far as dollars go. And within the Space Sciences Laboratory, Dr. David Woodbridge was the project director of Project High Water. His deputy project manager or project director, I'm not sure what terminology we use, was Mr. Ray Hembry. And also associated with the, let's say, scientific evaluation of the dissociation was Dr. Spencer Frary. Now, Dr. Frary and Mr. Hembry are still in Space Sciences Laboratory. Dr. Woodbridge left Huntsville around 1961, somewhere thereabouts, I believe. So he's no longer here. Mr. Hembry and Dr. Frary, I'm sure, can give you much more detailed information than I can about Project High Water.
Well, now you say that congressmen objected to letting all this Florida sand loose in the atmosphere. Water make them any happier? I mean, how did you, could you just say to them, well, we're checking the dissociation of water? Or were there other statements that you made to reassure some of the critics that this was indeed a valid scientific experiment?
Well, let me say this. The criticism was really not a unanimous criticism. It was a fairly low-level criticism. Yet it was something that we should pay heed to. And we might also say that the sand really wasn't released in the atmosphere, but the stage intact came back to Earth.
Yeah.
And so we really didn't release sand in the atmosphere. But it was recognized that maybe we could do something worthwhile. And it was thought that Project High Water would be an undertaking which would provide some data, and it would be an experiment that really could not be performed in any other fashion, simply because there was no way to get such a large mass of water to such a high altitude at that time in the history of our space program. It really was a unique opportunity to carry such a large quantity of water to high altitudes. So we should point out that Project High Water was not formulated only to remove objections from flying sand, but that it was something that came along as a later step. It might very well have come even if there had not been any criticism about sand, about flying sand, but that's one of the things that did enter into our thoughts at that time.
Well, was there any consideration that examining the reactions of water in space would have any connections with an accident involving a live second or third stage? I mean, what would happen if all of this loose hydrogen and oxygen got loose in the atmosphere through an accidental rupture? Was exploding the water in any way related to this kind of feeling?
Probably not so far as I can recall. However, it was directly related to the release of large quantities of combustion byproducts. of which water was one, into the atmosphere as a result of the launch of a Saturn vehicle. In other words, when all the fuel and oxidizer in the Saturn launch vehicles were burned as the Saturn vehicle passed through space, there was released into the atmosphere a very large quantity, very large mass, I should say, of byproducts. So by looking at the dissociation of this very large quantity of water in one place, we might be able to gather information that we could not obtain as we looked at a relatively smaller mass of massive combustion byproducts.
And the answer to the experiment apparently was that there's enough dispersion or dissociation that there is no apparent negative effects or anything like that left as a result of this.
I don't remember just exactly what the conclusions were. Again here I'd like for you to see Dr. Frary or Mr. Hembry.
Uh-huh.
But I do remember one thing, and that is that from photography it was very obvious that the water cloud dissociated very rapidly. It remained visible for only a very short time, and I really don't remember what that time period was.
Well, do you have anything else to say about high water? Could we move on then?
Think we should move on. That's about as much as I have to say.
Well, then, what other projects related to the Saturn program after high water were you involved in?
Well, I was involved in an overseeing sense, I suppose, in all of the research that was conducted in the Space Sciences Laboratory that was related to the development of the Saturn launch vehicle. Now, one of the things that we tried to do in the Space Sciences Laboratory was to formulate our research program so that the research would, if at all possible, support the development of the Saturn launch vehicle. But at the same time, the research should provide contributions to the bodies of scientific knowledge. Within these broad guidelines, there were some research activities that supported the Saturn development program more closely than other research activities. I myself was involved, from a personal standpoint, in the studies that were undertaken to determine the need for power supplies, the level of power supplies for the future, and the kinds of power supplies that might be used in the future. I was also involved with the development design of heat rejection systems that were involved with these power supplies. The power supplies generating electricity would be the primary power source for electric propulsion systems. And the electric propulsion systems were they constituted a major research activity in our space sciences laboratory. In fact, right after we became part of NASA, the Marshall Center was the center that was responsible for the development of electric propulsion systems within NASA. About 1961, or possibly 1962, this mission responsibility for electric propulsion was transferred from the Marshall Center to Lewis Research Center in Cleveland. And so, at that time, the Space Sciences Laboratory had to reorient many of its research activities, because much of the research was related to the development of electric propulsion systems in 1960 and 1961.
So what direction did you go from there then?
Well, we went into the direction that was largely governed by the needs of the Saturn program and by the disciplinary strengths that we had in the Space Sciences Laboratory. One of the things that was in one of the areas in which we had a fairly strong capability and a strong interest dealt with infrared physics and ultraviolet physics. The work in these areas was a carryover from our early work in the design of thermal control systems for satellites during the ABMA days. During those days, we had to develop thermal control coatings that had the proper reflectivity and absorptivity characteristics. These reflectivity and absorptivity characteristics were strongly in evidence in all of the, or let's say in a good portion of the UV and the IR work that was then done in Space Sciences Laboratory. So some of the IR work dealt with thermal mapping of the moon, for example. And at the present time in the Space Sciences Laboratory, we can still see that the UV work and the IR work has now been carried to the point of making observations in these wavelength regions in the stellar field, for example, using the astronomical telescopes the Space Sciences Laboratory now has. So we can really trace the chain of activity in infrared and ultraviolet from about 1956 up to the present time in Space Sciences Lab. Some of the same people that were working on the IR and UV problems in 1956 are those that are working in the same field today.
This is not a question, I suppose, directly related to this, but I'm a little bit vague on it. Can you tell me anything about the starfish electrons and the Van Allen belt? And do you remember anything during Pegasus? The Pegasus came up with some data about the decay of starfish electrons. Did you have anything to do with that? Remember any?
No, I don't remember much about that at all. There were some reports written during the ABMA days that were classified. They dealt primarily with let's see what this is called. There was a man by the name of Christopoulos at Livermore, I believe, who predicted that there could be an artificial injection of electrons into the Van Allen belt.
Yeah.
And this was accomplished in a way it's measured by Explorer 4, I believe. Mm-hmm. But I don't remember anything about starfish and those measurements.
Something else too. Specific question. You said you were doing thermal surfaces of one kind or another. Did Allodyne come out of your work here, or was that a commercial coating?
I'm not sure if Allodyne did come out of this work. If so, it probably came out of the materials division
okay.
in astronautics laboratory. Mm-hmm. See, there was somewhat of a separation of the efforts here. The astronautics laboratory people, at that time it was called the Propulsion and Vehicle Engineering Laboratory. The people in the materials division there were concerned with, primarily concerned with the chemical and the mechanical properties of materials. Now in Space Sciences Laboratory, we were more concerned with the physics mm-hmm. of the material. In other words, while we were both concerned with the development of thermal coatings, the astronautics laboratory may be said to be more concerned with the physical characteristics of applying the coating, how it stood up under the space environment, how it withstood the launch vehicle environment, temperature, vibration, so on. And in the Space Sciences Laboratory, our people were more concerned with what happens to the emissivity and absorptivity properties of the coating after exposure to space conditions. For example, we found that there was a darkening effect of thermal control coatings upon exposure to ultraviolet light. And this was a physics phenomenon. So consequently, the Space Sciences Laboratory tended to go in that direction, and the Astronautics Laboratory tended to concentrate more on the physical characteristics and the material characteristics and the chemical properties.
Can you recall, in your experiences in the Space Sciences Laboratory, any, again, I use the term discovery or something like that, that had a direct impact on the design of the Saturn vehicle or a change in its mission?
There may very well have been one. Offhand, I don't recall any right now. But let me point out one one characteristic that identified the research work that was going on in the Space Sciences Laboratory. Most of the other laboratories had a direct role, a clearly identifiable role in the development of the Saturn. The Space Sciences Laboratory had a sort of a supporting role rather than responsibility for one specific hardware element of the Saturn. As these other laboratories had responsibility for the development of one particular part of the Saturn, they also tended to do research in those areas that related to their development responsibility area. And so consequently, in the Space Sciences Laboratory, we often helped on an informal basis the other laboratories, but the end result of all of the work that was done in a number of places, such as in one or more of our Marshall laboratories, including the Space Sciences Laboratory and possibly at a university. When all of the results came together, they usually came out of the laboratory that had responsibility for development of that particular part of the Saturn.
Okay, that really is a question I think I was trying to ask in a sense.
Right. In other words, we may very well have supported the Aspreonics Laboratory in looking at some of the solid-state physics problems concerned with microcircuitry.
I see.
Or integrated circuits, for example. Yet, we had only a small portion of the total problem in the Space Sciences Laboratory. The Astronics Laboratory would publicize the overall results.
Okay, before we don't want to keep you too long here, but I have a question which I suppose is a little impertinent, but it's something that we're going to be asked as historians to answer, and so we have to try and get some inputs from people. You worked with the Von Braun team for a long time and had some very close associations with Dr. Von Braun. How would you characterize the way the team worked? How do you account for its success? Or could you say that the way it worked brought about maybe some negative results on occasion? It might have been better to do it some other way. Just what is your feeling about the Von Braun team and about Von Braun as a working group?
Well, my feelings changed considerably during the years that I was here. Let me try to explain what I think the strong points of this kind of teamwork are by stating how I looked upon it from a very personal point of view. First of all, when I came here, sat in on many of the meetings where all of the laboratories directors were present and where Dr. Von Braun himself was present, and where were presented many, many opposing views with what seemed to me almost endless